Back in 2004, the health and economic status of Missouri women was rated a C- by Women's Policy Research. Have we made progress since then? A recently released Missouri Women's Health Report says there's good news and bad news. Women have made gains in the workforce and in higher education, but Missouri women are more likely to live in poverty and still face barriers in employment, education, and health care access. The 74-page Missouri Women's Report was a joint project by the Women's Policy Alliance and MU's Office of Social and Economic Data Analysis. Susan talked with one of the key researchers, Kristen Metcalf-Wilson, about the report's findings. She explained these are not just issues of sickness and wellness.
One of the issues that our report looks at is not only the well-being of women in their status, their health status, particularly with diabetes and cardiovascular disease and breast cancer and unintended pregnancies. We look at a lot of specific health issues, but we also look at how women access the system. So do they have public or private insurance? Are by having that insurance, do they actually improve their outcomes? Because I think regardless of whether someone has insurance, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a healthier pregnancy if they don't understand or have access to the providers to help them. So interesting to note in the report is that we have some of the poorest women in our state, which live in the southeast region of the state, are some of the poorest women in the state. But because of that level of poverty that they're in, they actually are more likely to have insurance because they receive state insurance or Medicaid. But we still do not see improved infant mortality rates, improved controlled diabetes, improved breast cancer survival rates. So just because they're insured doesn't necessarily mean that they have an appreciation for getting screenings, preventive care, getting in early for pregnancy and prenatal care, those types of issues. So it's more than a single thing. Hopefully legislators can understand that poverty is has an impact on health, just as receiving insurance or providing insurance for someone does.
Now, getting deeper into some of these health indicators, I was surprised to learn that Missouri ranked 10th for the fewest deaths in breast cancer.
Yes, and that's something we should be proud of.
Yes, what do you attribute this result?
Well, one of the programs that the state of Missouri has is a Show Me Healthy Women's program, which is a fabulous program, and it allows women that are uninsured or unable to afford mammograms receive those mammograms in a timely fashion, and then providers around the state sign up for that program to be able to offer the service. The unfortunate thing is that we could do even better if we fully funded that program, because it historically runs out of money before the year is up, and also doesn't necessarily provide treatment once something is found. So it is a screening program. But it does allow women to get that screening early and on time and not delay it because they're afraid of cost.
Now, you also measure unintended pregnancies, which you point out it makes an impact on achieving educational goals and workforce participation.
Mm-hmm.
But one challenge certainly is, and part of your recommendation is more family planning services. Yet, is this realistic with some of the recent challenges to family planning services?
Yeah, the state of Missouri is quite divided on contraceptive or reproductive health, and so it is an issue. But if you remove the controversy and just look at the facts, unintended pregnancy is a huge public health burden to particular communities and to the state. And it's quite proven that women that have unintended pregnancies have an increased risk for poor outcomes and actually delay education or workforce opportunities in order to deliver that pregnancy or choose abortion as an option. So if you want to bring down the numbers of abortion, certainly improving those unintended pregnancy rates would make a big difference. And the unintended pregnancy, just to define it, some people just think, well, they kind of have a vision in their head that, well, this is the teenager, the adolescent that you know, wasn't using protection, but unintended pregnancy is really defined by the mother at birth. So when we record those statistics, you know, unintended doesn't necessarily mean unwanted. So these could be working women with families of their own that, for whatever reason, got pregnant at a time that they weren't planning on it.
And as you point out, another piece of good news in this report was that actually teen pregnancy is down.
It is. Teen pregnancy is down for the state of Missouri, and actually is pretty competitive with national levels. So that's something else we should look at to say, well, what is this? How are we improving it? And hopefully one of the things that help us reduce that number even more is access to reproductive health care for long term. So at any age, women can control the size of their family.
What do we think we did right to reduce teen pregnancy, which I know is a hot issue for some years?
It is. You know, we look at different counties, and while some counties in the state as a whole are down, we should remember also that there are some counties that are still very high. So while we might have unintended pregnancy rate as a state that's pretty competitive, we have areas of the state that still have those high pregnancy rates.
What are some of those areas?
If you look at the birth rates that are down for the state, we are at our lowest rate since the year 2000. But if we look at our numbers in the southeast region again, it's a concentrated area down there that have the highest numbers of birth to teens, 15 to 19, in that Boot Heel area mm-hmm. of the state. And some would argue, and I guess I would too after doing this research, is it about access to providers or education about how to protect yourself or prevent a pregnancy that might be our problem in specific areas of the state?
One of your other recommendations regarding health care access is improved access to Medicaid and private providers' prenatal care. Now, as far as I know, this has been an issue for over 30 years, but it doesn't seem to change. I think largely because of the budget implications. You just have to be able to pay providers, private providers especially, more money to do prenatal care for Medicaid populations.
Yes.
So how do we address that when we have been so unsuccessful in getting any change in this area, really over the past 20, 30 years?
Right. It is and has been an issue historically for access to prenatal care. And I think one of the things that would be beneficial would be to look at Medicaid reimbursement for prenatal care. Because while we may have providers in, say, the southeast area of the state that provide prenatal care in their local communities, if they're private providers, receiving private insurance reimbursement is higher than public insurance reimbursement. And so they're more likely to fill their practices with private pay patients, privately insured patients, versus publicly insured patients. And so then that then comes around for this woman to receive care, prenatal care, to have to drive great lengths, big distances, to get care from a hospital that won't turn people away, a non-for-profit or an academic health center that would see any number of people. But private practices will actually limit the type of patients they'll take based on the reimbursement.
Now, on another note, you say more women are working, and especially urban women. But I'm wondering if the supports that women who work need, like child care and elder care, have kept pace with this trend, because certainly that would have policy implications.
Yeah, and, you know, child care is skyrocketing. Being mother myself, I was happy at the days when we no longer needed that service in my family. But it is very difficult for women to find affordable, safe, quality child care in their own communities. And if they don't have family close by that will be able to do that at even odd hours, say shift work or evenings or nights, it makes it very challenging for women to leave the house with young children. So when we see women, you know, numbers improving in the workforce, I think we need to look at those counties that are doing it well and perhaps model some of those things in other counties. And we see in metropolitan areas, transportation may be easier if there's public transportation available to get to and from work. But if you're in a very rural area and, say, your partner or husband has a job and there's only one car,
right,
how then do you both get to work?
Yeah, that's certainly a dilemma.
Yeah, and if you're trying to get children to and from daycare or even school, you know, without transportation available, it makes it very difficult. I mean, one thing I think we should look forward to is, you know, internet access if we can improve internet access in rural areas, more women can attend even GED classes online now. So there's opportunity ahead, I think, but we need to be committed to making those things happen.
Women are living longer, and of course they outlive men. That's something we knew. But the downside of that is that their physical and economic health may not always be good.
Very true. In fact, we know in the state of Missouri, the biggest disparity we see among men and women in poverty are women over the age of 65. That number is 38% on the average for women 65 and older for the state. But in some counties, it's as high as 49 and 59%.
Now, what are the factors that impact that primarily?
Well, you know, if we look at those baby boomers, which that number will increase, I mean, women living longer than men, but now we have a large population set at 65 and getting older. So that we look that those numbers could possibly increase. And that's important to recognize because women in that generation may or may not have been in the workforce as long and or created their own pension or retirement fund. And so if their husband or spouse dies or the pension that they lived off of with their spouse is gone, they are basically on a very limited income.
So I also notice that you say the age of the first marriage is increasing. So the age that people are getting married for the first time is increasing. And there are increasing numbers of women who are never married. What are some of the implications of these statistics?
Well, it does tell us that women are making choices, you know, either to start a family or get married because they may delay those big decisions in life because they have more opportunity. And the state of Missouri does really well at getting women into college. We actually have more women attending college than men in the state of Missouri, and sometimes 4-1 in some counties. So we do see women seeking higher education opportunities. And many researchers would say that that is a key indicator when you see that delay in marriage or delay in first pregnancy.
So another good news, bad news scenario in your report, women have achieved parity to men in higher education, which is good news. But the thing that stuck out to me is that there's still a great disparity among pay, women making about 74% of what men make.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So what are the factors here?
Well, we're consistent with the national average for our state, about 74 cents to the dollar. In some areas of the state, we do better. In some areas, we do worse. We tend to see that wage gap close with women attending college. They may get to 85 cents to a dollar, maybe even 90 cents to a dollar, but they still cannot completely close that wage gap disparity between men and women working with the same education in the same job.
So you also point out that just like Congress and Senate nationally, women don't fare as well compared to men in getting congressional and Senate seats, a little better in our Missouri legislature than the Senate.
Yes.
And also there's a need for more county commissioners. How do we make this happen, though?
Yes, in the report we do note that we find women more likely to run for non-paying positions, so your school board or your city council, those kinds of non-paid elected positions, but you're less likely to see women run for paid positions. I think it's a very good question to get out there. There's organizations around the state that help support women running for office. So, you know, we certainly, as an organization, the Women's Policy Alliance, would like to see that happen because we do know that the evidence supports that policy changes that impact women are more likely to impact them in a positive way if there are more women at the table making those decisions.
Well, as we close, and I know it's very hard to summarize in a nutshell what you think broad recommendations would be. I mean, you have a list of them. But what do you really want policymakers to take away from this report?
Well, I would really hope that they utilize the report as a tool when making policy decisions because, as we can see, there are some things in the report that we note are positive things for women and that we do well. and that we can use this information to help continue to support those programs and the efforts of policymakers to continue to support those programs, but also start to make changes in some of the policy we have that we know create more barriers for women to get out of poverty. One of the things that I continue to speak about with the Women's Policy Alliance, and when we talk about this report, is that we can't isolate these issues. There's a reason that there are four different sections of this report, because they all impact each other. If we don't have healthy women, we don't have healthy students, we don't have healthy workers, we don't have healthy families. They all connect. And so hopefully this will create a bigger picture to have these discussions about, so that when we talk about improving healthcare access, that we know that it's not just about insurance or access to the system, but how do we then get women engaged in the system and educating themselves to be healthy? So there's so many things that intertwine with one another. You can't just separate an issue and think fixing one problem is going to change it all.
Well, we thank you for being with us on KC Currents.
You're most welcome.
That was Kristen Metcalf-Wilson, an assistant teaching professor in the MU Sinclair School of Nursing, who helped compile the Missouri Women's Report.